Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial in New York City. Boy, arguments. Arguments, that's it. You get into conversations with people, you get into trying to talk to somebody about something. When you get home, we must talk about it, she says. And he goes, another conversation? You want to have a conversation, is that what it is? Yes, we'll have a conversation. So you figure you're going to be talking for some period of time. How long are you going to be talking? And how good is this conversation going to be going? My friend Richard used to have a rule. Richard said, if the conversation has two rules, I thought they were great. One rule is always evaluate the motivation behind a discussion. If the person talking to you is either they're constructive or destructive. Sometimes they're talking to you because they just want to pound you on the head, pound you into the ground, and there's no way that this conversation is going to turn into anything positive. He said those kind of conversations you should determine early on if you're with somebody who wants to construct something or destroy something. The other rule that Richard had, which I thought was good, he said after 20 minutes, if things have not improved, stop the conversation. And I thought that was kind of good because he said, you know, after 20 minutes of conversation, things should have gotten a little better because the idea of having a conversation is to improve things. If things get worse and you're digging holes somewhere within the first 20 minutes, what are you doing here? Does it get any better? Did you ever get one of those conversations where you wish they would have ended at some point? You get to a certain point and then somebody brings up another point and another point. Well, all of this is something that we've studied for many years. I've published quite a few things on it, but I have in the studio with me the representative of nonviolent communication, the work of Marshall Rosenberg, who's been a guest with us, who has studied the art of communication, which he calls nonviolent communication. The principal facilitator, the workshop coordinator, the executive director, the guy in charge of getting things to happen, and a spokesperson for Marshall Rosenberg is Tom Bond. That's T-H-O-M Bond. Tom, welcome back to WBAI.
Thanks. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, hey, Tom, conversations, trying to have a communication with somebody. How do you know if this is going to work out or not work out or how the person feels about it, you know?
I don't actually know for sure. Although I'm more interested in a conversation to be focused on what that person's needing, the motivations, as you were talking about before, for me are really what's going on. And the beating up and all those other parts, the judgments and the blame, that's actually not where I want to be. That's not what I want to focus on. So for me, if I'm in a conversation, I want to always move it from this, from the realm, if you will, of judging and blaming or evaluating. I want to move it toward what is it that this person needs, and also what is it that I need. It's very simple. It's not that exciting, you know, in terms of, and it's not real intellectual, but it's very, very effective and very difficult, I might add.
Well, how do you know? How do you know? I mean, if somebody says they want to talk to you, how do you know? I mean, sometimes conversations just don't work out. The motivation behind the conversation is just not there. Somebody's angry. Somebody's angry at work. And they start talking to you about how dirty the house is. And they want a conversation about how dirty the house is. How do you get involved in that conversation? You, as a nonviolent communicator, what happens at this point?
Well, the first thing is, no, there is no such thing as a conversation without a motivation. I mean, the motivation, there's always a motivation. So I want to know what that motivation is. In a conflict, I may not really be prepared to hear that message. For example, if I'm triggered, I don't really care about what's going on for you. I don't care if you think, I'm just not ready to receive your message if I'm triggered. So most of the times when we have a conflict or a conversation that's, quote, not working, it's because both people are triggered, and so they're not open to hearing what's going on for the other person.
Triggered.
Triggered.
A word. Okay, not that our audience knows what that word means. Triggered. What does it mean?
Something you said triggered something in me. In nonviolent communication, the theory is you don't make me mad. I get angry. But it may be, and it may be something that you did that triggered my anger. However, it's not yours. It's mine.
So the word trigger means that somewhere inside of me, I have this explosion available, and that you came along and what you did was you did something that ignited this, but the explosion is all mine. The dynamite's right inside me. It's not your fault, but you may have stepped on this part of me that explodes. If
exactly.
I get angry, it's not your fault in as much as you're not to blame, but you may have stepped on my toe that was infected, and that's why I'm screaming.
Exactly. I'm the stimulus. And the test for this is you could say the same thing to two people. One of them's going to get upset, and one of them's not.
Now, let's go back to what we're talking about. We're talking about a method of communication, and we're going to teach today a method of communication, of nonviolent communication, how to talk to somebody you love in a way that they could hear it. Okay, and I have a good example. I have a very good example. We just recently discovered we had a couple who came to see us, and the woman discovered or suspected that her husband had been having some kind of a relationship with a younger woman, and so she went after him, and she's yelling at him and screaming at him all the time. He denies this completely. He says, I want to keep the marriage going, especially for the children's sake. I want to talk to you about it. And she keeps talking to her friends and her relatives about it. He cheated on me. They come from a culture that is Middle Eastern, where this is considered a certain thing, and they're all gossiping about it all the time. By the time she gets back to him and he wants to talk about it, he's willing to talk about anything. But how could you do that? You've got to admit it. He says, I got nothing to admit. Number one. Number two, also knows that if he did admit it, he might get his nose amputated in the middle of the night. So both cases, he doesn't want to have this conversation anymore, but he does want to work at healing the marriage, but he doesn't know how to do it. Here he has this person who is enraged with him, and she is just enraged all the time, and she keeps doing it, now going on months. And she won't stop. Every conversation, how could you do it, tells the children, your father did this, tells her aunt, he did this to me. What do you suggest at this point? How do we get them on the road where there's a level of communication that gets reestablished when he's the guy who wants to try to get it going, but, she feels like the victim?
Right. Well, in this case, I'm hearing that there's a conflict around the facts. So the first thing that I would want to do is get the facts out of the picture right away. When we get into I was here first, you were here first, I didn't, there's no cheese down that tube. So where I would want to move is to what's at play here? What are the needs? Now, the wife has needs. She has needs for trust. There's something that's been not working for her. She values an open connection between her husband and herself. And she's devastated, obviously devastated, that that connection's not there. The, quote, affair, the alleged affair, for me, is not the issue right now, right? We want to start at the very beginning. Where is the need that's popping up? So I want to guess. I want to go to what is she needing? What's up for her? So it's, for me, the first thing that pops up is trust. Let's not talk about an affair. Let's not talk about the world. Let's talk about our relationship. What's up around that? Well, it's a need for connection. So how do you get there? In the world of NVC, we use empathy.
Let's describe when he says NVC. To Tom Bond, who lives NVC, it doesn't mean the National Victorian Candidates. It means nonviolent communication.
That's our nickname.
That's our nickname, the NVC guys. So the NBC guy comes over, this guy walks over to you and says, Tom, what am I going to do? That's all she talks about. You say, go over to your wife and say to her, look, what's really important here is trust.
That's not actually what I would say to him.
Okay, what would you say to him?
I would say, what's up for you? We cannot empathize with somebody else if we need empathy. It's just like on the airplane, you always put the oxygen mask on yourself first before eating others. So,
hey, let's back that up. You cannot empathize with another person if you need empathy?
That is correct. It's like a law of nature.
Let's break that down a little, okay?
Sure.
You can't empathize. You can't understand. He can't understand her needs if he is needing to be understood. It's the greatest thing because, you know, when I sit with him individually, I watch his eyes just dying to be heard. He's dying to be heard himself. You know, he's dying.
Yes.
He needs the empathy. So it's a very important thing. A man who is in a situation or people who are in a situation where there seems to be somebody who is being irrational or being victimized, who is accusing somebody else, even the accuser needs to get empathy. So your first
That's
step
correct.
Is to empathize with the person who might be considered the perpetrator, not even the victim.
Absolutely. Because the perpetrator met some need when they were, quote, perpetrating. The other thing is that in this, even in this conversation, if we want to bring it to the present moment, we're needing connection. He's needing connection. He's not getting connection when his wife is so so distraught, so in such deep pain. There's no room, there's no space there for a connection.
He gets no connection at all. Sometimes he stays out till 3 o'clock in the morning, and he says, I mean, and I believe him in this case, he says sometimes he wanders the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Wanders the street. She thinks he's out at 3 o'clock in the morning seeing his girlfriend, which he doesn't have. He says he's out wandering the streets, but it's little wonder to me that if he was out wandering the streets and he met some girlfriend at this point, anybody who would empathize with him would suddenly be very welcomed, because he's an empathy.
Well, he's got a need, right? He has a need up, and it might not be another woman. He could get empathy from
a bowling partner,
yeah, or from anybody, from a cop on the corner, from a cab driver. Empathy comes from wherever somebody's willing to create a space for you to express and discover, really, your own what's up for you.
It's a nice thing about bartenders.
There you go.
Bartenders are professional empathizers.
Absolutely.
Non-judgmental, which is the important thing, right?
Right.
They are not going to tell you what to do. They are not going to criticize you. They're not going to fault you. They're not even going to fault the other person.
Mm-hmm.
A real empathizer. How does a real empathizer, how does a person feel empathy? What are the conditions?
The components.
Empathy? Components
that I would call them are two things. What are you feeling? What are you needing? In other words, so in the English language, we have a broader definition for empathy. But in nonviolent communication, our empathy really focuses on feelings and needs. I don't want to empathize, for example, with somebody's story, because then I'm just staying in their story and we're not making that move away from the judgment part to the needs part. So I want to create a space for you to tell me what it is that you're feeling, what it is that you're needing. And I don't actually expect you to know. It's not something we're all that good at. And so what I'm going to do, if I want to create that space, is I'm going to start guessing. And I may be right or I may be wrong. But what am I doing? When I'm in that mode of guessing, I'm creating space. Even if I'm guessing wrong, it doesn't matter, because what I'm doing is saying, what is it? I am interested. And so I make that space for you.
Well, wait, let's go back on that a minute, Tom, because I think it's very valuable. I need your empathy.
Well, you need empathy.
I need empathy. I need to feel like I belong somewhere in the world, that somebody hears me, that somebody understands me. I'm out barking because I'm worried about my business, or I'm worried about going under surgery, or I'm worried about going somewhere. And what I need is not somebody to deal with me on my facts, because I'll just make up the facts.
Right.
Who's going to clean the floor? Who's going to water the plants? I need somebody who's going to say to me, hey, I see that you're really nervous. You know what some people do? Oh, you're not nervous about this. You're nervous about that.
Right. We call that fix it.
Right. We have fix it. We don't need fix it people. We need somebody who comes along and says, oh, how would you do that? I mean, if you see somebody really, you get to the bottom of their nervousness and
sure.
you say, wow, I could see you're feeling, and here's where you guess. I see you're feeling a little out of control. Do you say things like that?
I try to keep it, you know, we use this feelings list, and it's when we guess feelings, we want to actually make it a feeling, not an accusation or not a judgment. So that way you can just check with yourself right there firsthand and say, well, is this something I'm feeling? Something like abandon, you know, do you feel abandoned? Well, that's not really a feeling.
Right.
I may be scared because I'm really wanting companionship.
So do you feel scared?
Yeah. Do you feel scared because you're needing a sense of safety, for example, in case of the operation? Somebody's going in for an operation. You may go through enough empathy to get to the point where somebody realizes, wow, I just really want to live. That's really important to me. And we hide that. It's under layers and layers of different things. So to get to the deepest need, the thing that's really, really rocking us, the thing that's really moving us, and when we get to that need, we have what we call a shift. And it doesn't always need to change anything in the world. It's a very interesting experience. I've had it many times. And that is just to get there, to look at it. Often disappears it.
Armand DeMille here with Tom Bond, who's talking about nonviolent communication. We're talking about empathy, the beginning of empathy. We're talking about a two-way conversation, the first of which is, let's say, the person who is somewhere feeling victimized by the other person needs attention. When a person needs attention, the first thing they want is to get some kind of empathy. In order to get empathy with them, how do you do it? Do you ask them what they feel? They may tell you what they feel, but very often they tell you a story. They give you a story, I feel this because of this, I feel this because of this. You are saying, Tom, you go underneath that story, you want to get to just a genuine feeling state. You want to say, what is this kind of feeling state the person is in? Let's not even get the whys of it. We could do our checklist. Let's look at our checklist and the wonderful checklist that they've put aside, the universal feelings and needs. If a person were feeling confused, you could say to them, if you look at a person, you could look at them and you could guess at their feelings, or you could ask them. But guessing at them and saying, you know, I guess you're a little scared. And they will tell you if they feel that.
Right. You're giving them the opportunity to check with themselves. You're changing the subject.
You're changing the subject off the story.
Right.
Into a sense of self. It's like saying to somebody, I see you're feeling a little warm, you know, and they could tell you right away, no, I'm not warm. Oh, I see you're feeling cold. No, I'm not cold. It looks like you're feeling nauseous. No, I'm not nauseous. Well, then they could easily tell you what they feel and don't feel.
Right.
Now you try and suggest a couple of feelings that they may be feeling where they validate or invalidate what you're saying, but you can't be attached to their answer.
Right. Actually, it's a guess, and we actually say it with a question mark. I try to. It's
try.
The
Show
practice
me what it would be like. Huh?
So I'm guessing you're is it that you're scared right now? Is that
wow.
What I'm seeing?
How beautiful.
And if
I wish
not,
people could see your face. You know, I wish people could see this kind of beautiful curiosity that is there. You're actually asking a person. You're not an analyst saying, I know what's wrong with you. Underneath your anger, you're really scared.
Mm-hmm.
That's an accusation.
That's
right.
Like
and there's
raping no space,
their mind. There is no space. It's a curiosity.
Right.
Let's say we go back to the very first person who is a woman who feels like her whole life is shattered,
mm-hmm.
You know, and she comes in for counseling. And she comes in for counseling and talks to a therapist, and she's talking about the fact he did this. The therapist would want to get to the feeling underneath it. Are you feeling scared? If you could get the person off the story down to the feeling underneath it, the story collapses because they feel your empathy.
They feel your empathy, and they where we're going here. It's for me. It's actually the feeling is is very important, but the only reason it's important is because it's going to lead me to the need. I'm not about feelings per se. I'm about needs. Nonviolent communication, yes, feelings is what we do. It's how we get from point A to point B. But what is point B? Point B is the needs. Why? Because we all have them. I'm not going to argue with you whether or not you have needs. On this sheet that we have here, there's a list of feelings, but there's also a list of needs. And I'm clear that every need on this list we all share as human beings. And when I say needs, I don't mean just need, like I need water or I need air. It's what we value in life, what we want to have a full human experience. So that's what I call needs, almost more in the Albert Ellis sense of needs and preferences.
So when we're listening, when we're trying to talk to somebody else, we are trying to empathize with them because we want to get to their feelings, because the feelings become a vehicle, become not a vehicle, but they become along the way. They're the pathway to understanding the needs that are underneath it.
Right. It's a tool that we can use. I call it my need meter.
Okay. But how do you discover? So you're saying that just getting to the feelings underneath the conversation is not enough. You got to get to the needs. Let's go back to the woman who felt violated because she felt her husband fooled around with somebody else, and she is now torn apart. Her whole world collapsed. I remember I spoke to this woman, and she said, I was so happy until that moment. I was so sure everything was okay. My entire world fell apart.
She valued that. She valued her family. Apparently there are children involved.
Yes. And,
right. So she valued, just like most human beings, value family, love, companionship, partnership. And so what do we...
Now, Tom, on the other hand, even though she valued it, if you looked from the side, she had two highly dysfunctional children. She had a lot of problems all over the place that she was talking about she valued, but, you know, she was valuing, feeling the kind of picture that she had of it, but she valued how she felt safe in this thing. She valued the safety of her rather dysfunctional construct that she had.
Right. So what was the real need that was up was... It wasn't about having everything be beautiful and everything be perfect, but have it be real, perhaps, and have a real connection. And from what we were talking about before, it seems like that's really what's up. I mean, if I had to guess a need, or if I was really to go there with this person, it sounds like it's about trust, shared reality, that there's some really big need up around that. And I don't like to psychoanalyze. That's not it's about therapy, yes, therapy in terms of going someplace. Psychoanalyzing, not really. So could I sit there and could psychoanalyze and go, well, when you were 2 years old, you had this happen and you didn't trust your mother and dot, dot, dot. And that may all be true. And actually, I don't care. What I want to do is be with that need in this moment that's up for her now. And not judge that need, not analyze that need. Just go there and be with that need. Just
okay, now we have to go back for a minute.
Okay.
If a person feels that her, and I'm going to stay with the same example, she feels her entire life fell apart when she discovered that her husband was philandering, or thought she discovered her husband was philandering, her entire world fell apart, and her reaction was an overreaction. It was much bigger. She couldn't stop. She can't stop. It is now 8 months later, and all she could do is talk about this thing. She can't have a single conversation with him without in some way telling him, you've got to admit it, you've got to admit it, you've got to admit it. And, of course, he can't admit it, because if he did admit it, she would crucify him. That's very clear. It comes from that kind of a culture. He is saying, nothing happened. I will not admit it. Meanwhile, she stays after this and harps on it and harps on it and harps on it. He has gotten to the point where he said, I know what I'm going to do. I'm never going to talk to you. I refuse to open my mouth and have a conversation with you, because if I talk to you, you're going to keep going to the same thing. We then go to talk to her and we say, now look, if you keep talking to him about this, he's not going to talk to you. She has a lot of feelings. Meanwhile, two children in the relationship are suffering from this whole thing. Mm-hmm. We need to change her mind in some way. We need to get her off this stuck spot in some way. She's stuck. we say to her, let's look at your feelings underneath. And we go to the feelings underneath and we give her sufficient empathy. We hug her. We say in our own kind of way, I understand the pain you feel. I understand your world fell apart. Now, what do you need now? And what is the need we're looking for? And what the need she is looking for, and I have found most people who come into therapy as a result of a crisis, is they want the old way back.
Mm-hmm.
They want to have back the old system, even if it was dysfunctional. Her need is to feel whole, even if it's in that same dysfunctional way.
Well,
so which need do we talk about? I mean, how
well,
much?
Well, this is great because we're starting to mix up in the conversation strategies for needs. The house, the home, the husband, all of our, it may sound cold in a way, but when we're in relationship, that relationship is a strategy. And so I'm using that other person as my strategy for connection, for possibly sexual expression, for partnership, for companionship, for all the things that we look for in a relationship. And so those aren't needs. So we try to move to the needs as opposed to the strategy, because there's the strategy is what's not working right now.
Okay, so we have feelings, we have strategies, we have needs.
Yes.
We have to be careful. We have stories, we have feelings, we have strategies, we have needs. We want to separate the stories from the feelings and the strategies from the needs.
Correct.
A strategy is something that makes a person somehow manipulate forces so that they could keep themselves somewhere in balance.
So that we can get our needs met. Every single thing we do, when you scratch your head, you're meeting a need. When you hit somebody, you're meeting a need. When you marry somebody, you're meeting a need. When you brush your teeth, you name it, we're meeting needs. So all those things are strategies. So what we want to do is, if a strategy is not working, we want to go deeper and deeper. Why? Because the deeper you go to the need, I can give you a somewhat trivial example. I want a bottle of mellow Italian wine. So I go into the wine shop and I say, I want a bottle of Chianti. So that's a strategy for a mellow Italian wine. What if I said, I want a mellow Italian wine? Now I have more possibilities. It might be a Chianti, it might not be. But I'm broadening my options. And even if I get a Chianti, at least I know that it was it met the deeper need. It wasn't a strategy. And actually, obviously, mellow Italian wine is a strategy, but the idea is that we're broadening the deeper we go, the broader our possibilities.
Sure. Imagine being able to walk in and say, I'd like to feel mellow. So you got anything to make me feel mellow? Then we'd be really down to the need. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with Tom Bond. We're going to be back with you in just a couple of minutes. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with you, my friends. This is WBAI 99.5 FM. We're talking about nonviolent communication at a very important time in our life when people are communicating right and left about all kinds of funny things. Where sometimes you hear words flying everywhere and the words just make no sense. Sometimes they sound like they're violent, but they're not violent. Sometimes they sound angry, but they're not angry. And all you want is just to settle down with somebody you love and feel some of those needs that we all have. Here's a list of needs. Connection. Acceptance. Affection. The need for appreciation. The need for belonging. Cooperation. The need for communication, the need for closeness, the need for community, companionship, compassion, the need for consideration, consistency. How about the need for empathy or inclusion? The need for intimacy, the need for love, the need for mutuality, the need to nurture. The need for reciprocity, the need for respect, the need for safety, security, the need for a shared reality, the need for stability, the need for support, the need to know and be known, to see and be seen, to understand and be understood, to trust and be trusted, the need for warmth. Armand DeMille, The Positive Mind, WBAI, 99.5 FM, New York City. We're talking with Tom Bond, who's a principal facilitator for Marshall Rosenberg. Marshall Rosenberg's book, which I have recommended to many, many, many people, families, couples, people with children, most important people with children. It's called Nonviolent Communication, A Language of Life. Tom Bond and Marshall Rosenberg have been very, very been very good with us here at WBAI. Very generous. They've donated books for our fund drives. And I want to thank them very much. But what's more important, I think we're such children when it comes to trying to be able to talk to each other. Trying to be able to talk to somebody you love and settle things down and get to the bottom of it. How do you do it when you're alone? It's so hard when you're alone. If couples could only do it, if couples could do training in nonviolent communication, if there was a classroom in school, if there was somewhere in high school they had, all right, we're going to have a class on nonviolent communication, and it had with it some groups where the kids would be trained. The other day I was watching a thing on television where they had bullying groups, and they had kids bullying each other on purpose, and they were making fun of each other so that you could learn not to be so responsive to bullying. Somebody would kid around with you, well, how could you wear a watch like that? Where'd you get sneakers like that, you know? And you would kind of laugh back at it because you would eventually become immune to it. I saw another couple where a man walks into a door. This is a husband and wife, and the husband goes in to a room and slams the door, and he says, it's just a little pot, you know, and he says, what? He slams the door on his wife, and then she goes in and she slams the door on him and says, it's just a little pot, how could you be picking on me? And then he goes in the room and he slams the door and he said, it was just a little pot, what are you arguing about? And then it's an ad for saying, are you afraid of slammed doors? Because if you are, then you won't be able to help your child through a drug crisis. Meaning that if you've got to become trained to not be so sensitive to a child's reaction when you're trying to take them through something like getting off drugs, you can't be so sensitive to it. Well, an interesting thing about nonviolent communication. Nonviolent communication includes not being triggered by the other person's violence. It is a beautiful skill to have. It doesn't only mean, I'm not going to talk to you if you're raising your voice. It doesn't mean that. It means I can be with you, in its ideal, I could be with you however you are, and I could hear underneath the words you're saying, the tears you are crying, the voice you're screaming, I could hear your need, and I respect it. I empathize with it. And I want to try to see if somehow I could help you meet your own need. This is the work of the group. The group, by the way, if you ever want to get in touch with Tom Bond and the group of nonviolent communication people, it's NYCNVC, the NVC standing for nonviolentcommunication.org. NYC, New York City, nonviolent communication, NYCNVC.org. is their website address. Tom Bond. So how did I do as a summary on that one?
It totally resonated with me. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The thing that did come up for me that was interesting was the thing about nonviolent communication is it gives us a way of getting into those or going into a situation and knowing that the chances of having it, quote, get ugly are smaller. If you go into a conversation with somebody with the full knowledge that they're wrong and that they need to be fixed, I'm imagining that that's not going to be a whole lot of fun, that conversation. So when we learn how to have a conversation with somebody that includes our needs but not particularly making anybody right or wrong, we're more likely, it's not guaranteed, but we're more likely to be able to get through that situation on the other side being connected.
Now, that's a really tough one because I would say every couple that have ever come to see me for couples counseling had one or the other person wanting me to tell the other one that they were wrong.
Right, to fix them.
Right, no, right. And they wanted me to tell the other one. You know, husband wants me to tell the wife she's wrong, and the wife wants me to tell the husband he's wrong. So they come to see me, and they present their case, and now it's up to me to tell, to justify, not justify, but to in some way validate that they're the right ones and the partner's the wrong ones.
Right.
It's very hard. I want people to think about this. Think about any argument you've ever had. Any argument you've ever had. Don't you believe the other person's wrong? I mean, how do you let that go? Of course they're wrong. That's why I'm arguing with them. If they're not wrong, why would I be arguing? So if that's the beginning of every argument I have, here comes along Tom Bond, Marshall Rosenberg, the nonviolent communication people, and they say, sorry, you want to have a loving relationship, you want to have a good communication, the other person is not wrong. Give that one up.
Yeah, well, and I'm not even going to argue that there is no such thing as right or wrong. What I'm going to say is it doesn't do me any good. There's no cheese down that tube. The right and wrong thing, it's just not going anywhere for me. Is it cold in here? Is it warm in here? Well, we could talk about that for a long time, and that's why those couples are here, because they've been in right-wrong land for so long that they're in so much pain that they're looking for a new strategy. Had they the ability to move to each other's needs and to move to their own needs, which not they may not necessarily have, then there's an opening. When we come out the other side of that understanding, having a deeper connection with that person, and it's almost magical the way things crop up, strategies, feelings, shifts, when we're in touch with each other's needs. It's as if it's a law of nature.
I have to give up that the other person is wrong. Yesterday, a couple came to see me. They were brother and sister. The brother believes he's justified to more of the inheritance than he deserves, so he's trying to get it out of the sister now that he's getting married and he's moving into a house. The sister feels that the brother has gotten enough, but she's kind of annoyed with the fact that the brother keeps wanting things from her. They're a grown-up adult couple in their 50s. And the brother keeps saying, you know, I want, I want, I want. And he says, because when I was a kid, you were not nice to me. And you're still not nice to me. And that's why I deserve. And he always feels that way. And she always feels in some way that he always wants from her. Somewhere along the line, I decided that I would have to make a deal with them. And I said to them, look, he's always going to feel you're wrong on some level. And you're always going to feel that he wants something from you. What if we put those two issues aside and instead we had a relationship based on something else, where those two issues were just, you assumed that they're in the background, but they don't come up into the foreground. You just don't let those up. He doesn't want from you, and you don't necessarily have to defend yourself against whether or not you're wrong or right in these conversations. And the two of them had to find some striking point where they just said, okay, we'll have to let that part go. We'll have it in the background. We won't bring it up. Yes, he said, I will always feel that you've been unfair to me. And somehow they got through for the moment.
For the moment.
And I was saying, you know, my next step, Marshall Rosenberg with this couple. They have got to go a step further than that.
Yeah, well, when you leave something, that's really something that's not resolved. And I'm imagining that they would carry this with them both for the rest of their lives. and we do carry things for a ridiculous number of years, for decades and decades. And until we process something, it will not go away. So what stops them from processing their issue around this money is that they haven't processed their issue around their childhood. So can they get to the unmet needs? Can they be seen around their unmet needs that are contributing to this? Well, empathy would bring us there.
Armand DeMille here. We're talking about communication between two people. Let me ask you something, Tom Bond. People very often try to motivate the other person by guilt. They will say, you owe it to me.
Mm-hmm.
They will say, you owe it to me. They will say, you caused me this. They will say, you deceived me. They will say, you this me, you me me. Does motivation by guilt, can it ever work? Will anybody ever get it motivated by guilt? Will anybody ever say to themselves, oh, I see your point. That's why I'll talk to you.
Yes, it does work. It doesn't work as well as some other things, in my opinion. I would rather, if I had my choice to motivate somebody through guilt or motivate them through compassion, I would opt for the compassion. The problem for me with guilt is that it's not permanent. And it also, it doesn't serve the other person. And ultimately, it doesn't serve me. I don't want to damage or to do damage to somebody or threaten damage to somebody in order to get them to do something. Why? Because I'm selfish. I don't want reprisals. For me, I would like something that's a more permanent piece, which means that it was done because somebody wanted to do it. I just have a saying, if you want to be miserable, just want other people to do things. Just expect other people to do things. Really, what I want to do is focus on what do I want? And so when another person becomes the strategy for that, if then we get into a situation where we're both getting knotted up, I want this to happen, and I'm going to do anything I can to make it happen, then we get into conflict, and we're disconnected.
Let's talk for a moment about boring conversations. Conversations where the person is kind of... you know, sometimes you got to revive a lifeless conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Can you talk about lifeless conversations?
Yeah, lifeless conversations are when there's something not happening for me. In other words, I'm hearing your story and I'm not hearing your needs. And when, for me, stories just bore me. So what I want is to know what's really happening inside you. That's what turns me on. So if you're going on and on about a story or talking about a movie that you saw or blah, 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 and I'm sitting there going, oh, I wish this person would just, you know, get on with it. Are we serving anybody by sitting in that conversation? And for me, the answer is no. So I've learned to interrupt somebody if I'm disconnected. And I remember the first time I did it, I was horrified. I thought for sure I would drop dead on the spot, if I did this, and it was really a wonderful experience. I said, listen, you're just losing me. You're just losing me. Could we turn this conversation to something else, like what was really happening for you? And because I'm just getting a little bored here, frankly. And he turned around and said, yeah, I'm actually getting a little bored myself. So the conversation then became alive. In other words, conversation can just be running our mouths while something else is going on in the background. And I want to know what's going on in the background.
Well, you know, very often I think the worst of them are the he said, she said. You know, and then he said this, and then she said that, and then he said this, and then she said that, and then I told him this, and then she told me that, and you're listening, and you're listening, and you're listening to a story, and you're wondering, what did you feel in the middle of this? And that's where you interrupt the story. So I think one of the things is to say, you know, I know you've got this long dialogue, or you're telling me the story about what went on, but I'd love to know, what did you feel at that moment? What happened to you at that very second? Add something to it.
Why are you telling me this story?
Yeah, why are you telling me this story? Well, you know, John Gray makes an important point. He says that for many people, just telling a story releases a serotonin exchange that for some people is very valuable. That's why people get their nails done. They get their nails done and they get in these inane conversations for no reason at all. Even the person who might be doing the nails may have no interest, not even speak the language. But just speaking for 20 minutes releases serotonin and makes you feel better. And so that could be a purpose for doing it, but that is not a communication.
Right.
That's a little serotonin wash.
That's a massage.
That's a massage. It's a little bath. I'm talking for the sake of talking. And then if you say to yourself, gee, he's a good listener, it means I gave myself a good massage talking while he sat there smiling and nodding. But if you want a two-way communication, it's a way to interrupt it. There is a way to interrupt it, which is I need to communicate with you. I need to feel your presence. And the thing that's always missing is I feel. In a conversation that always gets boring, the person does not include what they feel. The most boring thing is the absence of presence of the other person.
And what they need from that conversation.
Yeah, and what are they doing here? Why are they telling me this? What do you want from me? You want me to hear you? You want me to listen to you? You want me to touch you? You want to talk to me? You felt lonely today?
Do you want me to be alive in this conversation with you? Because if you don't, I'll just leave and you can keep talking. I'll read the paper. If that's really what you want, or do you really want to engage me? Because if that's what you really want, that's not happening.
And I want to be with you, and I want to give you what you need, and I love you very much.
There it is.
You know, I think it's very important that one of the things that Marshall said in his book is that what bores the listener also bores the speaker.
Yes. It's true, because they're also not connected. And if I want your feelings and needs, if I want to know what's going on for you, and what you're saying is stopping me or isn't bringing me there, what are the chances that it's bringing you there? So what I would try to do is steer the conversation, rather consciously, just out in the open, say, hey, do you want to try moving this to some other thing that might be more fun for both of us?
Because I'd like to be there for you.
Yeah.
Armand DeMille, we're talking about listening, and we're talking about trying to have some kind of a conversation with somebody that is very difficult. If the person is stuck on the shame, blame, judgment, and they are really after you, and it's you. One of the ways of judging a conversation I used to like is I used to have a scorecard. And when the person would talk, I would see how many times they used the word you and how many times they used the word I. In a conversation, if a person is using the word you more than they're using the word I, you know this conversation is not going to work because it's an accusatory conversation.
Judgment.
Yep. You, and then you. Well, you want to talk about your own feelings? Yes, I'm telling you how I feel about you, and what you. These kind of conversations are just nothing.
Well, they're in that zone of the judgment and blame. They're out, and so they're not in the zone of feelings and needs. So when we're out in that zone, we're not connecting. We're not with that universal part of people. And in fact, every judgment, there's an unmet need. So when I'm hearing you, I'm thinking, what do you need? If you think I'm slow, your judgment is that I'm slow, you may have a need for understanding. Every judgment, you name it, you give me any judgment word, as soon as it shows up, to me that's a clue that you have an unmet need. So I could just sit there and look at the judgment word that's not going to bring me anywhere, or I can start to wonder. I can start
so
to say, what is that
anytime I
mean?
Criticize you, you know you're sloppy around the house and your sloppiness around the house.
Oh, yeah.
And then you could say, I wonder what their need is.
Easy.
What
you're needing
mean?
Order. You're needing order. You may be needing
consideration
or mutuality.
Mutuality, some of the needs that I read earlier.
Sure. Now, if I want to sit there and be with your judgment, I could go, well, I'm not sloppy. You're anal. You know, there's no cheese there. Again, you know, I'm our conversation's not going to proceed. Yet if I can look and kind of decode and put on a different set of ears and say, what's that? What's going on there? Oh, well, you need order. And so in the way we've been raised, when we have an unmet need, we try to figure out who to blame.
Well, if you've got children, nonviolent communication is essential. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can break my heart. the way that somebody's misuse of communications between a parent and a child, it's almost as if they want to crack your spine. It's almost as if they want to impress you. And they have no idea how the words of these big, big people can affect these children. So I want to recommend, again, nonviolent communication, a language of life. And as we go out today, which we will be doing shortly, and again, to get in touch with the non-NVC people, it's nycnvc.org. Tom Bond. We're going to have to be going right now, my friends. If you wanted to hear today's program again, you could go to wbai.org, or you can go to thepositivemind.com, where you'll hear a lot of archives. And you could send an email also to Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at thepositivemind.com. I'd love to hear from you and hear your reaction. But on our way out, as we will, let's talk about some of the universal feelings and needs. And among the universal feelings and needs are a need for authenticity that everybody seems to have, a need for integrity, a need for play, for joy, for humor, for adventure, a need for beauty, a need for communion, a need for ease, equality, harmony. And even in physical well-being, there's a need for air, for food, for movement. There is also a need for meaning, you know, for awareness, celebration, challenge, self-expression, stimulation, understanding. A need for dignity, a need for freedom, a need for independence, a need for spontaneity, and most of all, a need to love and be loved. Be back with you soon, my friends. You can show your support for The Positive Mind and for WBAI by becoming a WBAI buddy. A buddy is someone who signs up to make a recurring donation to WBAI. You can do that through your credit card for as little as $10 a month. You could join the team of people who show their consistent support for the station. It'll appear on your credit card. You'll see it at the bottom somewhere. A small amount, tax deductible, every month, making a difference. You can go to give2wbai.org and you could just press a button and become a buddy, and they will let us know that it was for The Positive Mind. Go to wbai.org. This is Armand DeMille with you. Become a buddy. Make a difference.